having a quorum. We'll get this meeting started. Because of the hour and because of the time, we've got the house rules. We're supposed to be out of here by midnight, so I would hope that people can be a little more concise than we would normally be, and we can get this thing debated and voted on and out of here. 5 minutes to, I'm going to stop debate, and we're going to have a vote on it by 5 minutes to midnight. So, Representative Solberg, if you want to explain your bill, and or sooner.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for scheduling this bill. I think everyone knows the contents of the bill, but I do want to explain a little bit of some of the perspectives.
One second here. First off, I'll move House File 3825 to be before us, and Representative Solberg, you can proceed.
Thank you very much. This is an attempt to solve a problem that we all know is looming for us, and that is to find a new home for the Vikings, but for a publicly owned stadium that would also have more than 200 events every year that would take place in it. We've been meeting, many of us, on a bipartisan basis with the Vikings for some time, and have established from the very onset that in order for us to proceed with this, there had to be a few things accomplished. One, we had to have the budget on its way to being solved. Secondly, that there had to be no general fund money in the proposal. Third, that any kind of funding had to have the theme of, if you go there, if you benefit by it, you're going to pay for the facility. We've introduced a bill based on those principles and have had some feedback from the administration as well. Within the bill that we introduced, there were two alternatives that were voted for funding this particular facility. One of them was several user fees that were benefited. It was a fee or tax on wholesale revenues that would be generated from memorabilia. The hotel industry from the metropolitan area approached us and said they needed to be part of a solution because they're great benefactors of the Vikings and other events that take place in that particular facility. And the governor has always said that a lottery would be part of a solution that he might consider. To that end, we introduced the bill that had two provisions. One was site neutral, Articles 1 and 2 of the bill, and the other one is a site specific to the metropolitan site, the Metrodome site right now. With the reaction of the administration and others, I am proposing a couple of amendments today, if I may start those off first, Mr. Chair.
Okay, which
amendment? And I, first of all, I need to have the A1 amendment, and I believe that's in your packet.
We have the A1 amendment.
It's coming around. And my understanding from the reviser is that that's strictly a technical amendment. And it just refers for some different cross references and so forth. So I believe it merely is technical.
I'll move the A1 amendment. Does everybody have the A1 amendment?
Did everyone get the A1 amendment? and I believe it is technical in nature. The revisor provided that for me.
Does everyone have the A1 amendment? What's that? Deb Dyson, would you please explain what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Solberg's correct. In the drafting of the bill, there was an error, and this is affecting the repealer, and it's deleting erroneous references to in the repealer and inserting all of the others that relate to the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. Articles 1 and 2 would abolish the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, and this inserts the sections relating to the commission that should have been repealed instead of what was. So.
So does everybody understand the amendment? Any questions of the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes.
And Mr. Chair, additionally, as we have stated with reaction to the administration and others, I have the A2 amendment as well that I'd like to have offered. This deletes Articles 1 and 2. It takes out tax on the memorabilia and motel room tax that the governor has strongly objected to. And the one thing we want to do is to work with the administration to find a solution. So I would appreciate if someone would move the A2 amendment.
Representative Solberg, we don't have the A2 amendment, so you want to walk through that. If you could do it orally, we can.
Yeah.
You don't have a copy of that?
Well, if it calls something else, you've got to allow the amendment.
I'm sorry. Oh, I have it. I have it A2. I'm sorry. Okay. We'll get copies for it. I'm sorry that I was under the impression that you had those. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want me to
read that, Representative Solberg, you want to read that, so.
Yeah, I
don't have the amendment.
We have some help always.
Mr. Chair, Pat McCormick from House Research. The A2 amendment is pretty straightforward. It's you're going to delete Articles 1 and 2. Article 1 is found on page 1. Article 2 is found on page 24. After that, you'd renumber the articles and correct the internal references. Essentially, you'd be left with Article 3 of the bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, with that, we're then left with pretty much the Minneapolis option.
Representative Fisk.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment.
Representative Hilty moves the A2 amendment. Representative Distance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, then if your A2 amendment or the oral amendment that's before us is adopted, then the A1 amendment was moot. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that's probably correct as well.
Got it.
Does everybody understand the A2 amendment or the oral amendment?
Patrick.
Any more questions? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of other correcting amendments as well. But at this particular time, I think that we'll spend the time a little bit with taking some testimony, if you will, please. And then we'll do some other additional. And you have a list. It's up to you who you wish to call for the testimony.
The first person on the list here is Lester Bagley. And Steve Poppin, do you want to go together or? Okay. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Lester Bagley, Vice President of Public Affairs for the Minnesota Vikings. I've got a couple quick slides to run through, some open comments, and then if there are questions, our Vikings Chief Financial Officer, Steve Poppin, can join me down at the table. We appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee.
Yes, sir.
It's been a long day, I know, so we'll get right to it. We're grateful for you that you're taking time to focus on this issue. We know you've got a lot of priorities, a lot of work done, and a lot of hard work ahead of you. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about the Viking Stadium situation. Real quick, a few comments about where we believe the situation is. Some opening comments. Here we are in the 2010 legislative session, and we are down to 20 games left at the Metrodome, and which is why we're here. We've been trying to have this conversation, bring this conversation forward. We've not been at the legislature in any committee hearings since 2006, since we were here with Anoka County on that proposal. So it's been a few years since we've had an opportunity to bring our case forward. So again, thank you for the opportunity. Where we stand, we are at the bottom of the NFL in revenues and last in the league. There are 32 teams. We're at the bottom. The challenges at the facility in terms of revenue streams have to do with the size of the facility. It's the smallest. The Metrodome is the smallest stadium in the NFL. It's the second oldest that hasn't been dramatically renovated. And it's a challenge in terms of space and programmable space and revenue streams that provide the opportunity for our team to be competitive. The other challenge we face at the Metrodome is the fan experience. We've been positive about the Metrodome. It's been a great facility for this community of this state. 77 million people have been through the Metrodome. And so it's been a great multi-purpose facility used by all of Minnesota. But the challenges are dramatic in terms of the fan experience. And the game day experience for our fans in terms of the concourses, the lack of facilities, restrooms, especially for women. The challenges are significant. If you would walk into the Twins ballpark or the Xcel Energy Center, you see what a fan experience a modern facility provides, and those are the two challenges, really: revenues and fan experience. We also have the challenge where there's the pressure being put on the Vikings and on the state, frankly, and as well as from the NFL, from other owners, and also from other cities who are working to secure an NFL team. In 2010, we feel like we've got some momentum, some opportunities to bring this conversation forward. We've got a great bipartisan, bicameral leadership group that have stepped up to try to take this issue on. We're appreciative of that. There's a coalition effort, many of whom you'll hear from tonight, includes CEOs and business community, business leaders. We have CEOs of our major employers that are engaged in this discussion, Target Corporation, Best Buy, Medtronic, Ecolab, General Mills, to name a few. But there's a great coalition of folks. We have folks in organized labor, the building and construction trades, and the local 17, the hospitality folks whom we hear from tonight, as well as folks in the hospitality industry. And most importantly for us, our fans are engaged. We have some here tonight, we see, and we appreciate that. But we're going to hear from our fans, and our fans have been helpful in bringing the discussion forward as well. They're passionate. They care about this team. They care about this issue, and they're very much paying attention. To get to the issues in terms of the stadium and the costs, the number in the bill is $791 million, and that is made up of a $632 million open-air NFL program stadium. When you add a fixed roof at $159, you get $791 million. The fixed roof is something that our organization has late agreed to consider. Our opening discussion has been an open-air stadium. There's been very strong support for a multipurpose facility. So the discussion had been over the last couple of years a retractable roof facility. So what we've done is, and what we've shown is a willingness to consider a fixed roof to try to drive the cost down, try to bring this down as tight as we can. In terms of the Metrodome site, the asterisk at the bottom, this number is only the pure construction. This is what it would cost to build a stadium anywhere in Minnesota. For the Metrodome site, it does not include a parking structure, does not include infrastructure. There's some minor infrastructure issues closing Fifth Street. Be happy to answer any further questions about that. And then there's also the issue of lost revenues. If we tear down the Metrodome or reconstruct the Metrodome on that site, the Vikings would need to play at least two seasons at the University of Minnesota. Our view is that the owner contribution should be calculated on the NFL program, on the open-air stadium. It's not that we believe the facility should not have a roof. We just believe that the benefits of a roof are great and that they accrue to the state of Minnesota and to the community. And that, again, we believe our contribution should be calculated on the NFL program. So if you subtract owner contribution from 791, we're left with $580 million. If that is bonded over 40 years, that would be a $35 million need to solve. And so that's the number we've been working for toward. Again, the 40 years is something that we've agreed to consider, but we would also need to ensure that there's some flexibility for that. If we would agree to a 40-year lease, which our owners are open to, we would be the first and only NFL team to consider and to sign a 40-year lease. So it's a significant issue that we believe needs some flexibility in order for that element to be included in an agreement. As talked about, and I'll let others make this point, but a stadium is for all Minnesotans. Having an NFL team requires us to have a stadium, and having the stadium allows us to maximize its use. We believe and agree strongly that the Metrodome has been a great community asset, a great investment for the state, a great return on investment, and it's also been used by high school amateur sports, football, soccer, cheerleading, baseball, as well as community events, NCAA basketball. It's not likely that we'll ever get another NCAA basketball tournament in Minnesota until we resolve this issue. The Super Bowl is a possibility. We would likely get a Super Bowl in Minnesota if we can resolve this issue, as well as the many other events there. One point that we wanted to make about the operation of a new facility is that we believe that the legislation should recommend hiring a for-profit operator. And the issue there is we've had conversations with legislators about that issue. The example is the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission does an excellent job of running the facility, of opening it, keeping it safe and clean, but they're not motivated to go out and recruit and secure events throughout the nation. There's a lot of events that we could get to this facility. Again, we believe that the legislation should include a recommendation at the least that we look at hiring a for-profit operator so we can get an organization that's out there aggressively recruiting events so we can maximize the activity at the facility, which also increases the economic activity in the state and the community and the taxes generated. A couple other points, and then happy to stand for questions. One is the taxes that we pay. It says the but-for taxes, but-for the Vikings in Minnesota. They're, in 2008, the Vikings paid more than $18 million in taxes. We'll get this number updated, but for 2008, we paid $18 million in taxes. These are checks we've written. They're withholding on players and staff, sales taxes, and the like. So there's the argument is, but for the Vikings in Minnesota, these taxes would not be paid. The other way to look at it is, without the Vikings, there would be an $18 million gap or hole in the budget that would have to be addressed, and those are taxes that go to pay health care, education, roads, et cetera. A CSL study, I think we're going to hear from the Sports Commission tonight, and CSL, they did a study that showed that a new stadium and the team will generate $26 million a year in taxes. That is the $18 million projected forward that we would that we pay combined with the economic activity at the facility. So if the number we need to solve for is $35 million in the scenario I laid out earlier, we have an opportunity to get $26 million on our way to the 35 just by having the team and the facility. The stadium virtually pays for itself. A couple other points, the paid it forward argument, again, a sports commission study, RSM McGladrey, and I apologize, Chairman Twilliger, if this is something you were covering tonight, but just real quick, the Metrodome was built for $55 million, $33 million in public money. The state of Minnesota put in zero. But in return, the Metrodome, since it opened, has generated $319 million in taxes. $304 million of that has gone to the state of Minnesota. The Vikings have been responsible for more than half of that figure. Again, our point is that that at the very least, the state of Minnesota needs to be at the table to help sort through this issue, as it's been a tremendous beneficiary of the Vikings and the Metrodome since it opened. The jobs argument, which you'll hear from Mr. Melander and Mr. Lunenberg about both the ongoing jobs as well as the construction jobs. The numbers in this slide are provided by Mortenson Construction, 3,100 construction jobs on the Twins ballpark, 2,200, total of 5,300. A Viking Stadium opportunity is 7,500 jobs, as well as local subcontract value of $577 million. Sports Commission also did the job study. They can talk more about that. Quality of life impact, as we wind down here, the more fans than ever are following the Vikings locally and nationally. Nearly half of the people in Minnesota follow Viking football on Sundays. We averaged in 2009, we averaged a 69 share, which means that 69% of the televisions on game day were tuned to Vikings. That's approximately 2 million people in the state. When you add the radio audience of 400,000 to 500,000 and the 65,000 that are at the Metrodome, you have half of our population following Viking football. No other entertainment or no other entity can come close to that number. In terms of television eyes and viewing, for example, the 2009 Vikings versus Packers game at the Metrodome, Brett Favre's return here against his former team was the most watched cable television event in history. The 2009 NFC Championship game in New Orleans, which ended badly, but it was watched by nearly 58 million people in the United States. So there's, again, more people watching this team than ever. We're a strong community partner. Needs to be acknowledged that for the third year in a row, a testament to ownership and coach and our locker room, that all 53 players on our roster plus our practice squad have participated in the community program. Our children's fund has raised and generated $8.5 million in cash that has gone to children and family related causes. More than half of that has gone to the University of Minnesota Department of Pediatrics. Lastly, on terms of economic impact, I know that the CEO of Meet Minneapolis, Melvin Tennant, couldn't be here tonight, but he did provide a study that has been circulated that showed that the Dallas Cowboy game, playoff game this last season, generated $5.8 million in direct spending. What we know from our ticket holder base is that we have 56,000 season ticket holders. Of our 56,000 season ticket holders, 40% of them reside outside of the metro area. 22% of our ticket holders come from outside Minnesota. We have on game days and the night before the game, we have people coming over from the Dakotas, northern Iowa, Canada, western Wisconsin. We've got 22% of our 56,000 season ticket holders come from out of state. And we know from surveys and talking with their fans that half of those people, both half of the out-of-state, as well as half of those non-Metro fans come and they stay at a hotel before the game and sometimes two nights. Lastly, we believe, and I think there's strong belief that the Vikings are a state asset. Our owners, we believe, have the right approach to the to our state in this situation. They have an investment approach. We want to invest in a winning team, invest in our community, stand ready and willing to invest in this public-private partnership, as well as a broader development around the stadium, should that be appropriate and the need for the community. This opportunity to resolve this issue will get Minnesota that competitive multi-use venue. It'll secure the Vikings for the next generation of fans. It will leverage those significant tax revenues, and it also is the largest economic stimulus opportunity on the horizon. We really believe it needs to get done. Our ultimate goal as an organization is to win world championships, and we're committed to that, and we will bring that home. As the finally, conclusion, why now? We believe there is an opportunity. Construction costs are down 9% from a year prior. Interest rates are at a 20-year low. There's this tremendous opportunity to create jobs. The clock is ticking in terms of the lease. I think there's public support. There's a public expectation that we keep the Vikings in Minnesota. And I think the Twins ballpark shows what's possible for our state with this new facility. To secure the long-term future of the Vikings, we have Minnesota Momentum, which is our grassroots site that people can find more information. A lot of things I talked about tonight are the facts and figures are on our website, minnesotamomentum.com. With that, Mr. Chair and members, we'll stand for questions if there are any.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bagley. I listened with some concern to something you said at the very end of your testimony. You said about keeping the Vikings in Minnesota. And, I went back. I saw some quotes in the Pioneer Press dated Thursday, May 26, 05, quoting Mr. Wilf as saying, asked if he would consider moving the Vikings if he didn't get a new stadium. Wilf said, quote, that will never happen. Further in the same article, Wilf said he wants an open-air stadium that might, quote-unquote, not necessarily need state funding to build it. He also said even if a new stadium isn't built, he would not consider moving the Vikings out of Minnesota, emphatically stating that'll never happen. So just for the record, because I think many, many people are concerned about this issue of the Vikings moving, we have the owner saying emphatically, and there's other quotes from other dates and other newspapers. We won't get into that now, but where he's been consistent on this, the Vikings will not move. Is that still the case?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, thank you for the question. And I think our owner believes that strongly. My personal opinion, if you're asking that, he can speak for himself on that, is as I don't believe that he'll move the team. I think the question is, if we can't resolve this issue or won't or leave it at status quo, the question is, would he sell the team? And then what happens from there? I think that's probably an appropriate question. But clearly having a stadium that no longer can compete for in terms of fan amenities or in terms of revenues, we're at the bottom of the NFL. We are getting a significant subsidy from other NFL cities and other NFL teams to keep a team in this market because of the stadium. That subsidy is under pressure and in jeopardy. So if that subsidy is gone, the question is, why would you own a team in this market if you can't compete?
Mr. Chair, well, thank you, Mr. Bagley, because it sounds like you are reiterating that there's no change in Mr. Wilf's position, and you're reiterating that Mr. Wilf would not move the team.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I believe that's the case, and again, I think he can speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, I guess, focus in more on this question of what it could mean for the Wilfs to sell the team and have somebody else move it. I guess first just a couple of baseline questions. It's my understanding that Minnesota is about the 14th largest market in the NFL right now. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
I'm tired. That's right. I believe that's correct.
Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Bagley, there are 32 teams in the NFL, which means that the NFL currently has 18 teams that are in markets that are smaller than the Twin Cities.
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, that's correct.
And
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Bagley, is there any other stadium or city that the Vikings could move to right now, or conceivably at the end of the 20-game schedule at the Metrodome?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, we're not really looking at that. I think we're committed to getting the job done here. We think we are. We're appreciative of Representative Solberg and Senator Bach and the other legislators from both sides of the aisle that are working on trying to resolve this, so we're committed to resolving it here. The other point about the market, the size market, since 1992, 28 NFL cities have resolved their stadium issues. Since 1992, there have been 28 new facilities. It's the Jets and the Giants actually share a facility, which opens next year. So it's really 27 cities, but 28 teams. So since 1992, 28 NFL cities have resolved their issues. There's only two or three left, and we are one of them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mr. Bagley, I guess what I'm trying to get to is more a question of timing. We've held this date, or this 20-game schedule, the end of 2011, is held out as kind of a deadline, if you will. And I believe that the statement from the Vikings has been that they will not renew the lease at the Metrodome. So the question is, as a practical reality, if that time comes and there is no new stadium under construction or promised in law somewhere, I guess my question to you is there a practical, financially winnable alternative for the Vikings to leave Minnesota at that time?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I think what our owners have said is they will not renew the lease without a stadium deal. And there's we have 20 games. We have this session. We hope we can get it done this session, but we've got more time if we need it. But we need to get it done. We think that the window of opportunity in terms of timing is this year. And I talked about construction costs being down 9%, interest rates being at a 20-year low, the job creation opportunity. All those things are changing, and as the economy stabilizes, hopefully heads back up, those costs are only going up. So again, we believe the window is here, but we're confident we can get it done.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bagley, I guess the reason I asked the question is because much of the advocacy around this stadium issue this year is along the lines of save the Vikings, keep the Vikings in Minnesota, build them a stadium now so that they won't leave. And my, I guess your testimony hasn't changed my hypothesis or my assumption that there really isn't an alternative for the Vikings to leave. To any place for them to go to, or a funding package that makes sense for them to leave in the event that we don't resolve this session. As you well know, and as everyone here knows, we've got significant challenges. We're dealing with the worst economic situation we've had since the 1930s, and the question of whether or not the Minnesota Vikings football team's status and ranking in revenue in the NFL and the amenities of a stadium are what our priorities should be right now. So it's important, I think, to understand a basic fact, and that is whether this stadium bill saves the Vikings or whether it provides a new stadium. And from your testimony today, I don't hear that it saves them. I hear it's a good opportunity, in your view, to do something now.
Mr. Bagley.
Well, I'm not sure there's a question there, but Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, we understand that you have priorities, and there's no question. We've tried to be respectful, and we would have preferred to have a stadium bill on the table and discussed and debated and worked through the process. But we've tried to be respectful of other issues, and we know you've got a lot on your plate. Very respectful of that, but we believe you can do that, provide the essential services, and work on this issue. There were a lot, the state faced a lot of challenges in 2006 when the Gopher football stadium and the Twins ballpark were approved. Again, we believe we're respectful of priorities, but we believe that this deserves a focus. As I said earlier, we have tried, but we have not been able to bring this discussion forward since 2006. We're now down to 20 games, and we believe it needs attention, and that we're greatly appreciative of your time and the opportunity to have this discussion.
Mr. Chair, one final question.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Bagley, I think the statement has been that the Vikings won't renew the lease at the Metrodome, but that doesn't mean that they can't continue to play at the Metrodome following the precedent set by the Minnesota Twins. They didn't renew their lease, but they continued to play until they found a solution. Is it not true that the Vikings could continue to play at the Metrodome even if they don't renew their lease pursuant to their statement?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, you know, this is the third ownership group that has tried to address this issue. This issue, again, this is not a new issue. This is not a new discussion. This discussion has been going on for near 10 years, three different ownership groups, and eventually we have to, grapple with it and resolve it. And I think that the challenges and the pressures that are growing on the Vikings from other NFL owners is significant. The pressure that's coming on the revenue sharing issue, we need to resolve the issue. We'll leave it up to state leaders to help us with the timing. We believe, I think we made the case that we believe it's urgent. Again, we've been trying to have this conversation. We're respectful of your priorities, but we're hopeful that we can move the discussion forward, and we appreciate your comments and questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to get it on record that wasn't a direct answer to a direct question.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have two questions. First will be Mr. Beard. Mr. Bagley, you're talking about 40-year bonds, Mr. Bagley, and on page 2 you have a cash flow requirement. I think that's what you mean there when you say $35.3 million a year to service those over 40 years. I'm trying to think of any stadium in the nation that's got a 40-year lifespan. In fact, I'm thinking of just our short history in Minnesota with Met, right. Met Stadium and the Metrodome. I don't think any of them made it 30 years. So I'm thinking about the efficacy of 40-year bonds against the stadium. How much would if we sold 30-year bonds, which seems to be about where stadium cycles are, how much is that $35.3 million change?
Mr. Bagley.
Hello, Mr. Poppin.
Or Mr. Poppin. Please identify yourself with the tape.
Steve Poppin. I'm the Vice President of Finance, Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Vikings. Mr. Chair, Representative, make sure I understand it. The first part of your question with respect to a 40-year lease, you are correct. There are no 40-year leases in the NFL. With that said, I don't believe there are any bond issues that built stadiums that are 40 years as well. One of the things that we did as part of the design process was it was very important to us to make sure that we built in flexibility into the design process of the stadium. There are examples out there. Kansas City right now just went through a major renovation. It's a 30-year-old building. They went through a major renovation. It's going to be completed this year, and the Chiefs just signed a 30-year extension. I think what we're finding that the buildings structurally will last more than 30 years. The issue with the Metrodome is there's no flexibility with that stadium. So there's no ability to, in an economical way, expand it to create the amenities that are required to compete in the NFL. So we believe that a 40-year lease is a possibility. We believe that issuing bonds for 40 years to service that stadium is a possibility as well. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Beard.
Well, it tells me what your intentions are and that you're okay with 40 years. I was just curious as to if we went back to 30 years, how much the annual payment would go up from 35.3. That's the easy question.
34. I don't have that off the top of my head, but I think it went to 43 to 45 million.
About 10 million a year.
It was $8 to $10 million.
Representative Beard.
57, I think is what it is.
We do have investment banker with RBC, Dane, that can help us answer that question if you'd like to hear.
Mr. Chair, it would be helpful to the committee, I think, to know, but you're telling us if you're okay with 40 years, well, maybe it's a moot point. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, just to echo what Mr. Poppin said, I think that it's possible, but one of the things that we've talked about with the legislators that we've been working with and others is that there would need to be some flexibility in the lease. You know, that we're in a difficult situation at the Metrodome where we're at the bottom of the NFL. We have a tough lease. We have and we can't, you know, we don't have much flexibility. So in terms of flexibility, and this can be discussed in, you know, in detail another time, but that what we're talking about is after year 30 that there would be some ability to revisit the lease, the revenue issue, where we stand in the league, and have some remedy if we are where we are now at the bottom of the league and no ability to kind of get out of the situation, if you will.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm cognizant of the time, and so let's not bring the banker down right now, but
Representative Beard,
as this moves forward in the process, you may want to just have that number going forward in the future. I do have a question for Representative Solberg whenever we get done with that.
35-40.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually just spoke with our banker on it. Under the model that Lester laid out up above, 30-year financing would be approximately $40 to $41 million.
Over $5 or $6 million a year then. Okay, thanks. That's helpful.
Mr. Chair, Beard.
Representative Solberg, in your original bill, I noticed you had a proposal to construct a whole new stadium authority, and then we deleted that portion. What's left in Article 3 then? Are we assuming that what's left is Metropolitan Sports Commission? Or how do you propose to alter
that? Mr. Chair, what's kind of left is a little bit of a hybrid. I've been working on this, quite frankly, today a little bit. If we do with the white plan that's in proposal in Article 3, actually it would be ended up with the City of Minneapolis being responsible for it. The payments of this particular plan, and there's a couple of them, but the Vikings would probably be up front for the first 10 years of payments of the bonds, either in the stadium itself. And then the proposal that we're being discussed with the City of Minneapolis is the bonds for the convention center will be done in 2020, in another 10 years. Cash flow, I think, is $28.7 million to pay those bonds. There's a stream that comes into the city from a district that is hotel, liquor, and so forth, food to taxes that pays. There's an additional stream, as I understand it, into the City of Minneapolis as well. I believe for the convention center, and we're very cognizant of the fact that the convention center needs additional monies besides just the bonds. They need to be running a convention center. They need to be able to spend money to attract the venues that they need, and they also need to look in the future for capital investments for themselves. I believe, and don't quote me completely because I haven't been able to see the books, but we're trying to get the information. I think that cash flow right now is somewhere in the 40 some million of 47.5 million dollars. It's good to have a lawyer back of me to remember the numbers. I'm a math teacher. I should know the numbers. 47.5 and the bond payment is 28.7, I think. So as you look at that opportunity to take just the bond payment and apply it to the stadium, we're very close to being able to make the bond payments for the rest of the 31 that we're looking at.
Representative Beard. Oh,
thank you. Mr. Chairman, as we move ahead, and this is the local government committee, I'm most interested moving forward. Thank you for the numbers. That's very helpful for us. But about the structure of that sports authority, who controls it? I noticed a proposal of the City of Minneapolis to pretty much appoint all of the seats on that board now, as opposed to having the governor have a hand and it being somewhat of a quasi-state agency. So I'll be interested in hearing that explained, why they think that's a good idea, and We may want to discuss altering that if necessary, but thank you.
Mr. Chair, we're always open up to suggestions. The reason it's going to be drafted the way it is two things. The Metropolitan Council in the proposal is kind of the ones who sell the bonds because they have a better bond rating, but the city of Minneapolis would be, under that proposal, responsible for them, for the payment of them. Additionally, since it's their money, so to speak, it seemed reasonable that they would have the authority to be able to control that facility as well. Additionally, there will be a proposal to in an amendment that I will be offering that will give a little bit of flexibility to the Metropolitan Council in case there's another location that another city might come forward with a financing package. We don't want to shut them out and say that this is the only opportunity. There has been, I think, some suggestions from other areas that they at least want to have a conversation, and we'll give them the opportunity to be able to do that if they can come up with their own financing package as well.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bagley, I think just a quick question about if you could give me the timeline for when I have some dates in memory, but I think it would be helpful to hear from you when the Vikings ceased negotiation with the Sports Facilities Commission on addressing Representative Winkler's concern about the 2011 deadline.
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, the November of 2009, thereabouts, it's probably worth a moment to explain what happened, but you know, looking back, and they can testify as to their views of what happened, but we had been in conversations and discussions with the Sports Commission to try to find opportunities and identify opportunities for sort of short-term relief issues. Once the Twins and the Gophers left the facility, the operating costs of the Sports Commission went down. We had a two seasons ago, we hosted a playoff game, and the commission can testify to the numbers, but by the Vikings investing in a winning team, the Sports Commission generates more revenue than we do from a playoff game. So it's unbudgeted money. So there was a windfall, if you will, to the Sports Commission. We had conversations about providing some short-term relief, trying to find opportunities, for example, to reduce our cleaning costs or our security costs. And those conversations went on for a number of months, and a period of months, and over 9 or 10 months, and we couldn't come to a conclusion or reach an agreement. And then we were alerted by a member of the media that one of the members of the commission had called the media and said, you should come to the commission meeting today because there's going to be some fireworks. And so and unbeknownst to us, they presented us a resolution that would extend our lease. They basically made the statement that the stadium issue will not be resolved this year, and the Vikings need to sign a two-year lease extension. And further, if we don't sign a two-year lease extension, then they would require us to pay an additional $4 million. We already pay $6+ million to play our games at the Metrodome. That's what we were faced with, and then the way it happened with the finding out from the media and having it sort of dropped on us. So that was, I think, there's been a long-term difficult relationship, and then we're probably equally responsible for that landlord-tenant relationship. Again, the Sports Commission does a good job of running the facility, but we didn't see eye to eye on that issue, and that sort of is where the issue went south, if you will.
Representative Kalin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. you know, I've been concerned about this 2011 date and the and you know, I think this committee last year heard my frustration with the fact that there are 31 other multimillionaires or billionaires sitting around the table determining what's an acceptable facility, what revenues work for them. You know, it's their frustration that we're helping to resolve here. You know, I think that that is a good faith effort. I think that the Vikings and the Sports Facilities Commission should meet this week, and that the Sports Facilities Commission needs to address this short-term problem, because I know that the Vikings have been meeting with legislators in private and to get to a point where we might be able to move forward. I voted no on Representative Solberg's technical amendment to delete sections 1 and 2 because you've run into what we have discovered is the problem to solving problems around here, is the governor. What's left here in this bill is almost not worth doing. I will likely vote it out here, but I think that we need to extend this 2011 date out. I think we need to wield a little bit of our power here and actually say what's best for Minnesota here, and is not only to let 31 other multimillionaires and billionaires set the terms of the deal. I'm calling on you, Mr. Begley, to sit down with the Sports Facilities Commission and address that two-year extension and come to some sort of agreement for the next 2 years that's workable, so that we can come up with a plan that's workable. I don't think this Minneapolis plan works. I'm going to be likely supporting it if my amendment to make sure that all Minnesotans can benefit from the project works. But there's a lot more work to happen here, and I think we need to take a little breather and give us some time to do it right.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that.
Please do.
Everyone, with brevity.
Yeah,
everyone has been frustrated by that this well. And I think sections 1 and 2 provided a great opportunity for us to have some creative type of financing plans. There's been all kinds of other ideas that have been floated through, and we've had some analysis of those particular ideas. I was disappointed in the administration's response to that. I understand it. I can only control what I can control. And so with that, I think the Minneapolis, with a couple of other amendments that we'll be offering, will give a great deal of promotion for this.
Speaking of amendments, we got a few more questions, but let's get the amendments put on so we get this bill in order so we don't run out of time here. The A8 amendment, you want to explain the A8 amendment? I'll move the A8 amendment.
Let me do that. I got to get them back in order here again. The A8 amendment?
A8.
Yes. Members, as I stated within the bill, there's the Metropolitan Council serves kind of as the bond council, and I asked our revisors why that is, because it's kind of a little surprising when you look at the draft. But that's for a specific reason, because they have the ability to get the cheaper bond raising. But to give some flexibility, as I talked about, the opportunity for other communities to be involved in it, if they so desire to come up, the AA8 amendment would allow the Metropolitan Council to serve as a sports facility commission on a temporary basis, and their ability then would be to take in any proposals that may come forward from other cities with financing package. And so I'd appreciate your support.
Any questions of the amendment?
It gives a little bit more flexibility to
it. Any questions of the amendment? All in favor of the A8 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
And then, Mr. Chair, there's also, you might as well do this kind of in conjunction with it, the Revenues 1 amendment. Do you have that one as well?
Okay. We have the Revenues 1 amendment?
Yes.
I'll move the Revenues 1 amendment.
And what that says is that the Sports Facilities Commission may identify user-based non-tax revenues to be assessed for non-tax purposes to impose in any facility. In other words, they may, instead of charging $7.50 for a beer, impose a fee of 50 cents more for a beer on that, to be able to use for the facility, within the facility. It gives a little bit of flexibility for non-tax revenues to be generated within that. I'd appreciate any support for that.
So any questions of the Revenue 1 Amendment? If not, all in favor of the Revenues 1 Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And, Mr. Chair, there is one additional amendment. That's the A9 Amendment.
I'll move the A9 Amendment.
In conversations we've had with the City of Minneapolis, they're also concerned about the development around the new proposal, and want to be able to make sure that development happens on that. But this is an idea that's been floated by some people from the mayor's office and others from the City of Minneapolis to allow them to recapture some of the increases in the land value if they participate in this. So, again, it's a little bit more flexibility for the City of Minneapolis.
Does everybody understand? Representative Eastland.
Representative Solberg, I guess under item one there, what are the laws, 1986 chapter and 396 section 4 subdivision 3, what is that referring to?
Well, let's see, I will probably have Dyson? To have council help me out on that. I think that's
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. McCormick is so good.
Mr. Chairman, members, those are the current entertainment taxes that are used to fund the convention center.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Solberg, is there any lessening of the requirements for municipalities using eminent domain in this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe so at all. Okay. That's never been brought to my attention. I would be surprised if that was in there. I wouldn't support it.
So does everybody understand the A9 amendment? If so, all in favor of the A9 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of other amendments. They're not mine per se, but I don't know if you want to. I think the rules allow us to go past midnight if you make such a motion.
No, they do not.
Okay. I've been informed not, so I'm going to.
Okay.
That's why I'm trying to hurry things up here. And hopefully people of the remaining testifiers can be short in what they have to say, and we can get. Now we've got the A4 amendment here. Whose amendment is this?
And
Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A4 amendment, and I'll explain it.
The A4 amendment is before us. Explain it, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, Mike, one of the arguments that I think we really do have to take seriously is what the future of the Metrodome is, and especially in the intervening years, that we've certainly heard that the cost of losing two major tenants and possibly three means that we lose the other activities that happen in the Metrodome. And one of the things we heard from the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission last year is the potential loss of the site for the Prep Bowl, the loss of a place to play high school baseball, and the other events. I know that the Minnesota Twins, I believe it was the county agreement, helped fund some ballpark, some local ballparks in Hennepin County. I believe if we're going to be investing in a state asset, we need to make sure there's statewide benefit. And, you know, for instance, in my district in North Branch, not only are they going to a four-day school week, but it's $375 to play football. I mean, it's absolutely unacceptable, and I know that that but for open enrollment, that North Branch would not have an athletics program. And we're at risk of having a Prep Bowl and having Edina, Wayzata, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka be the only four schools that could afford to field competitive teams to get there. So, Mr. Chair and members, what this amendment will do is require that that I believe it's 5% of the initial upfront help from the Vikings and 5% of the escrow deposited to cover the 10 years of debt service be deposited into an existing fund in the Minnesota State High School League, who would then use it to provide need-based financial assistance grants only to state-sponsored or league-sponsored activities.
Representative Solberg, are you okay with the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think so. I think that's a great discussion to have as we go forward, and I'd like to have it in there.
Is there any other questions of the amendment? Representative Fannin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kalin, how much money are we talking about here?
Representative Kalin.
Well, Mr. Chair, my planning had been around the what I think we call the purple plan that is now that we've now lost, right? And so Ms. Dyson and I will have to confer on what that 10-year escrow account will be. Originally, it was $13 million up front and $1.6 million a year of the ongoing revenues. But so we'll have to do some math to Ms. Dyson has anticipated that the loss of Article 1 and 2. And so structurally, it's correct in terms of the dollar amount. I can't tell you yet, but I will. We'll get you that as soon as we possibly can and probably take hopefully by tomorrow morning's hearing, we can have that number.
So if I understand it correctly, Mr. Chairman, it's 5% of that $1.6 million? Is that?
No, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lanning, the original $13 million was 5% of the upfront Vikings contribution,
okay,
plus then 5% a year from ongoing. So there'd be this nice seed chunk that would be put in there, and then moving forward, as you know, to do statewide things of statewide impact for our schools takes a good chunk of money. I think 5% is a reasonable amount. I thought about 10%, but I think the 5% is reasonable. And so I'll get, as soon as I can figure out what that number is, I will let you know hopefully in the morning. But as soon as I know it, I will share it with you and with all legislators.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Mr. Price. Chairman, I'm okay with the concept. I think we need more particulars here, and I'm willing to wait to get that from Representative Kalin. And I would like to know something, too, about how this money would be used. And so as this moves along, if it does move along, I'd like that more of that information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would agree with that concept, and I think by putting this in, we continue that conversation.
Yes. So all in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. I've got about two more minutes here, and I'd like to have Elizabeth Glidden from the Minneapolis City Council, if you can be.
Mr. Chair, while she's coming, I'd like to request a roll call on the motion.
A roll call's been requested. Ms. Glidden, please identify yourself for the tape, and please be brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elizabeth Glidden. I'm a Minneapolis City Council member, and I am chair of our Intergovernmental Relations Committee. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the City of Minneapolis regarding our concerns about the proposal that is before us today, and the proposal, I guess, now that has been redefined to focus solely on Minneapolis and our funding source for the Minneapolis Convention Center. I would like to start by acknowledging that the Vikings are most definitely a Minnesota tradition and an asset to our state as a whole. And I hear this from my constituents, as I'm sure that you hear that from your constituents as well. But I will say that hearing the information about the ticket holders and other information presented by Mr. Bagley, I think, reemphasizes the point that the City of Minneapolis would like to make, which is that support for a Vikings facility should have state financial support, or at the least metropolitan-wide financial support. And as it stands right now with this proposal, this is Minneapolis only support for this facility, and we think that that is not equitable. The other thing I want to focus on, and I am trying to keep brief in recognition of the time, is to give you some more information about the Minneapolis Convention Center. We have a great concern in Minneapolis about taking critical funding from one of the top, if not the top, economic generators for the state of Minnesota and for our region. Let me give you some numbers. The Minneapolis Convention Center generates over $260 million annually for the state. In 2008, that number specifically was $267 million. Based on the information we have, the economic impact generated by the convention center is approximately four times that generated by the Vikings, according to the University of Minnesota study. Yes, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Glidden, we have to take a vote, so that's why that's would this be heard tomorrow morning again in government operations, so if you can have that information ready for them tomorrow, that'd be great. But we have to take the vote here before midnight otherwise. So the clerk will take the roll.
Remind us, Mr. Chair, of the motion. Is this recommended to pass or recommended to pass without recommendation? We're going to pass it without recommendation.
The motion is to recommend to pass GovOps.
To GovOps.
So the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Beard?
Beard, both sides. Keep it moving.
Representative Fiskins?
No.
Representative Eastland?
Pass.
Representative Hilty?
Aye.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Kalin?
Aye.
Representative Lanning?
Yes.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Sterner?
Aye.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Chair?
Aye.
He passed. 6-4.
The motion prevails, passes.
6-5.
6-ayes, 4-nays. So the motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman and members, the legislative process sometimes isn't very friendly to any of us, and I understand and I apologize for the lateness of the hour. This was supposed to be scheduled for a couple-hour meeting. I'm sure that the chair tomorrow will, as we start, again, we'll have an opportunity to have everyone give good testimony for and against. I appreciate very much everyone's attention tonight, and thank you so much.
Representative Sterner moves the minutes for the previous meeting.
Yes, I move the minutes for March 15, 2010.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Meeting's adjourned.